Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in these uncertain times. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds on the Holistic Survival Show. And by the way, be sure to visit our website at holisticsurvival.com. You can subscribe to our blog, which is totally free, has loads of great information, and there's just a lot of good content for you on the site. So make sure you take advantage of that at holisticsurvival.com. We'll be right back.
Have you listened to the Creating Wealth series? I mean, from the beginning. If not, you can go ahead and get book one, that shows 1 through 20, in digital download. These are advanced strategies for wealth creation. For more information, go to jasonhartman.com.
My pleasure to welcome Jay Butler to the show. He has been on with me before, and he is with Asset Protection Services, and he looks at the world from a global perspective when it comes to asset protection, investing, and citizenship, and all sorts of interesting things. But today, we're going to talk about that oh-so-fascinating topic of the New World Order. The first time I ever heard that word used was from George Bush Sr., and since then, it has picked up a lot of interest around the world, and there are many reasons why, and today we'll explore that. Jay, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on board, Jason.
Good, and you are coming to us today from the beautiful coast of Italy, right?
Correct, I am. We're about 250 meters off the Ionian Sea.
Uh-huh, fantastic. Well, lucky you. Well, hey, the New World Order, I mean, wow, what a topic. And I don't think anyone could deny that to one degree or another, a New World Order is definitely being foisted upon us by very big forces. What's behind it? I mean, there are so many aspects to it. Maybe we'll start off talking about the Vatican and the different sovereign city states. Just dig into it. It's a big subject, obviously.
Sure. Well, the New World Order is real, and it very much exists. I believe that there's simply far too much documentation at this point in time for people to continue trying to live in denial and, you know, saying that it isn't real or it doesn't exist. In Italian, the New World Order is called Nuovo Ordine Mondiale, which means the New Order of the World. And people often ask sarcastically or, you know, if it's real, well, who is it? You know, what is it? Why does it exist? And the New World Order consists of three sovereign city-states that together form a hidden empire in plain view. So each point of this triangular formation of this empire serves a distinct purpose in controlling key aspects of society, namely religion, finance, and the military. And being that I live in Italy, and you happen to mention the first of the city-states, which is the Vatican, in Italian that's La Città del Vaticano, they control the spiritual aspect of this New World Order triangular empire of city-states. So the Vatican was established in 1929. It's a Vatican City. It's not a part of Rome. It's not a part of Italy. It's not a part of the European Union. It has a population of around 1,000 people, but it has a totally separate legal system. It has its own private army, which is Swiss Army Guards. They have their own prison system, albeit very small, but they have their own newspaper, Osservatore Romano, which is the Roman Observer. They have their own post office, the Postia Vaticani, which is not the Posta Italiane, different. They have their own radio station, their own television, their own national flag, their own identity, and of course, they pay no taxes. So the Catholic Church really rules the religious faith of over 2 billion Christians worldwide, even if you're one of the 40,000 denominations that exist around the world, it's pretty much recognized that the Catholic Church in this Vatican City is the head of the Christian faith. So the Catholic Church, through the Vatican City, holds incredible amounts of investments through the Rothschild Bank in England, France, and the U.S., with billions in gold bullion with the Rothschilds and the Bank of England and the U.S. Federal Reserve, not to mention huge investments with Shell Oil and General Electric. So the Catholic Church is run entirely through the Vatican City, and it's the world's largest financial power. Pretty impressive. They've accumulated the largest amount of real estate on the planet, and it has more combined wealth than any government, country, trust, or individual worldwide.
Wow. Amazing. So all the movies about the Da Vinci Code and what's the tie in there? I never really got onto that. I just know that there was a time when every person was reading the Da Vinci Code, saw the movie, never read the book. I don't know. It never really intrigued me that much. Does it tie in with that?
Yes and no. I mean, I don't want to get too much into the movie or the book itself. It's part fiction, part nonfiction. But it is interesting to note that the best lies, if you will, are woven around the truth, and the best secrets are hidden in plain view. And I think that that duality really throws the majority of people for a loop, because when it's so out in the open, so in your face, if you will, it's actually hard to stop and look at it and say, you know, is this real? Because it's so authoritarian, if you will. So I don't know. That being said, let me continue on to the second city-state, if that's okay with you. The second one is the inner city of London, which controls the financial portion of the triangle for the Empire of City-States. It was established in 1694, and the inner city of London is not a part of London. It's not a part of England. It's not a part of the British Commonwealth, nor is it even a part of the United Kingdom. It, too, has its own separate legal system, its own court system, its own private police force, its own national flag. It has its own identity and, once again, pays no taxes. William III, rather, of Orange, privatized the Bank of England in 1694. And in 1812, Nathan Rothschild crashed the English stock market and took control of the Bank of London. So the city-state of London is literally the wealthiest square mile on the face of the earth. It holds Lloyd's of London, the London Stock Exchange, all British banks, 385 of offshore branch locations, 70 U.S. banks, houses Fleet Street's newspaper and publishing monopolies. It's the world headquarters for the English Masonry and for the Crown of England. And this is really pretty fascinating. The Crown of England is not the royal family or the monarchy. The Crown of England is the private corporate city-state of London. It's a corporation. And this corporation is ruled by a council of 12 members under a mayor, which is actually called the Lord Mayor. And this Lord Mayor and council of 12 acts as proxies. And a proxy means to represent or vote on behalf of another party. So the Lord Mayor and the council of 12 act as proxies for the 13 wealthiest banking families on the face of the planet. And so a lot of times when people have heard whisperings, if you will, of the New World Order about the ruling families, the ruling elite, this is really what they're talking about, the Rothschilds, the Warburgs, the Oppenheimers, the Schiffs, and others. And it's these families and their descendants which run the Crown Corporation of London and the title to the worldwide Crown land and colonies like Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. So Parliament and the Prime Minister in the United Kingdom stand much as a front to these private ruling families, much like the President and Congress do in the United States of America.
Amazing. Really amazing how organized this is.
Yes, very much so. Okay, continuing, the third part of the triangle is the District of Columbia inside the United States of America. Now, I'm not referring to Washington, D.C., because Washington is actually 68.2 square miles. I'm referring to what's called the Mall, which is a 10-square-mile of area known as the District of Columbia, and this is what controls the military, the United States military aspect to this New World Order triangle empire of city-states. So the Mall was established in 1982. It's not a part of Washington, nor a part of Maryland or Virginia, nor is it even a part of the United States of America. It has its own separate constitution, which was ratified in 1982 and then enacted in 1987. And it also has its own legislative system under Lex Fory, which really raises a lot of questions as to why people can't get remedies, you know, in the federal courts or even in the U.S. Supreme Court, because they're almost under a different legislation. They have their own private police force. They have their own national flag, which has three red stars on a white background representing the three different city-states. They have their own identity, and of course, that little section pays no taxes. So,
amazing, yeah.
So what you have to envision is that you have sovereign pieces of land, if you will, separate individual city-states that sit inside of states, inside of countries. They're a party to no nation, but the three city-states work together to form, if you will, that Egyptian pyramid formation that ties into the Masons and everything else to form the spiritual, financial, and military foundation for the New World Order.
And the 13 banking families, everybody talks, you know, about the Bilderberg Group. What's the Bilderberg Group tie in, if any?
The Bilderberg, which was actually named after the Bilderberg Hotel, I believe, in Germany when it started back in 19...
When they started the meetings, right?
Yeah. Correct, when they started the meetings. And the Bilderberg is actually, if you will, they're very high up in the food chain, don't get me wrong, but they take their orders, their agenda, when they actually sit down. They have, if you've ever gotten the lists of the topic of conversations that they have at those meetings, those are actually provided to them. So they kind of take their marching orders from these families. And then from the Bilderbergs, it goes to the Trilateral Commission and to other roundtables like the Council on Foreign Relations, who in turn gives it to the Secretary of State, who then passes the information on to the President as to what he's supposed to do. So it's this hierarchical level that's just shrouded in compartmentalization. So the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing, and keeps everybody in the dark as to the bigger picture. And I think that's another reason why the internet and the free trade of information is such a threat, why you have all these new PIPA laws and everything coming out trying to block the free flow of information, because they're scared.
Right. You know, and just to let's just tell people what that is, because it's such a new thing. Some people may not know. There was recently an attempt to let the government have the authority to shut down websites under the guise of copyright protection. And feel free, Jay, just to chime in here anytime. I'm not, you know, an expert on this by any means. But you saw last week, Wikipedia shut down for a day. Google put a big black sticky note, if you will, over their logo in protest. And it looks like it worked for the time being, but basically what this said is that if there's any piece of material, it could be a giant website. You could take the CNN website, for example, and if there is one piece of material on that website that is alleged to violate a copyright, it would give the government the right to shut down the entire website. And what's likely to happen in that type of a scenario is all of the little independent websites where those people are publishing information, podcasters, bloggers, etc., they don't have the legal stamina and the lawyers and the ability to fight these things. And the big corporatocracy, they would have the power to fight them. But even then, if something was found offensive to, you know, the government or the New World Order, the way these things are done is they're always done under the guise of something to help us, to protect us from ourselves. It's nowadays we live in such a hostile government environment. And I'll just take, for example, and this is a bit off on a tangent here, but feel free to chime in, Jay. Anybody who owns a small business anymore, trust me when I say you are breaking laws. You are breaking laws that you don't even know exist. When I grew up, my mother always said to me, Jason, ignorance of the law is no excuse. You need to know the rules. You can't just claim, oh, I didn't know that you weren't supposed to jaywalk or to drive 80 miles an hour on the freeway. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. But the problem is, every year, every day, the government is enacting so many new laws, it is impossible for any one person to know all of the laws. So
correct.
What they'll do is they'll go under some obscure law that nobody's ever even heard of or understands, and basically attack you, and in this case, shut down your website.
Correct. And this is nothing new under the sun. Let's touch on one of those laws that many people may not even be familiar with, or pieces of legislation, as it were, that still affects people to this day. So since we ended on the American District of Columbia portion of this New World Order triangulate, let's delve into a little bit of the American history to expand upon what it is that you're saying about, you know, unknown pieces of laws or legislation. King James the First, he not only created the King James Bible, right, which is just so outlandish. I mean, in modern day, that would be the equivalent of having the official Barack Obama Bible, right?
I mean, I don't think you'd trust that anymore. Are you sure one isn't in process?
Yeah, probably. But King James also created in 1606 what was called the Virginia Charter, and that allowed British forefathers to colonize America, allowing the crown to have the sovereign authority over all the citizens and land in America, which, you know, of course we stole from the Indians, right? And after a century, basically, of the overreaching powers of the crown and the attempt by the Bank of England to directly indebted the colonies by forcing them to use their banking currency, the American Revolutionary was initiated, fought, and won. But after the Declaration of Independence was signed and the Constitution was drafted forming the new republic, the Treaty of 1783 was signed identifying the King of England as the Prince of the United States, and it contradicts the belief that America won the War of Independence completely. So the United States has always been and still is a British Crown colony.
That's a pretty bold statement.
Well, it is, but it's got pretty good legs to stand on, and let me to continue on that line.
So, you know what's interesting about that is that I was telling you off air that I interviewed someone from the Lyndon LaRouche organization who I found fascinating, and they said the same thing. I had never heard that before, but that they were talking about how it's basically the British Crown that is pulling all these strings. It's amazing.
Correct. Through this New World Order triangulate, of which they own and control the District of Columbia, which is the 10 square miles inside Washington, D.C., that runs the executive branch of our government through the banking cartel. So the Crown of England, which is really the private corporate city-state of Inner London, they did lose a great deal of the rights formerly enjoyed over America prior to the Revolutionary War. But the treaty recognized the continuation of the crown to receive payment for King James's business ventures in permitting the colonization of America under the original Virginia Charter of 1606. I mean, think about it. If America was truly free, they would have never agreed to pay the debts and reparations to the King of England. So the Revolutionary War, although it did grant us a tremendous amount of freedoms that previously citizens didn't enjoy, it really just turned people into debt slaves rather than physical plantation slaves. So physical slavery was abolished in England under the Slave Abolition Act of 1833, and it was later used in the United States in 1864 as a means to quell the growing concerns about the meaning and significance of the missing 13th Amendment from 1810 in the United States Constitution. And what I mean by that is there was a 13th Amendment ratified in the United States in 1810, and it's called the Title of Nobility. And it prevents American presidents and members of the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of government, particularly the executive branch, from using titles such as king or queen if there happened to be a woman in power, or, you know, a prince or a baron. But during the War of 1812, England burned down the White House and destroyed most of the ratification archives to the U.S. Constitution. So in 1871, the District of Columbia was created as a separate corporation acting outside the United States of America. And if you move, does that make sense? Did I lose you?
Yeah, no, you've got me. That's fascinating.
Okay, so that's really the foundation, if you will, for the most part. I'm trying to just, you know, cover the highlights of this, is your Virginia Charter of 1606, the Treaty of 1783, and then, of course, the 13th Amendment ratified in 1810, because documentation beats conversation, right? Now, if you fast forward, because I don't have time to go through all the history, but if you take a look at the meeting in 1910 on Jekyll Island, the banking cartel incited the run on the banks, or the banking scare, in 1907. And it's amazing to me. I still have people on occasion that say, oh, that meeting on Jekyll Island, which is a physical island off the coast of Georgia, they say, oh, it never existed, and that's, what did you say, you know, conspiracy theory, right? In which case, I love to say, no, you're a document denier.
a document denier, I like that.
The state of Georgia has a plaque on the door above the room, inscripted in brass, that says the Federal Reserve System was created in this room. The men who attended that meeting were Senator Nelson Aldridge. He was the chairman of the National Monetary System. That doesn't hurt. Abraham Piet Andrew. He was the assistant secretary of the Treasury. You had Frank Vanderlip. He was the president of the National City Bank of New York, representing the Rockefellers. There was Henry Davison, the senior partner of J.P. Morgan. You had Charles Norton, the president of the First Bank of New York. Benjamin Strong, head of J.P. Morgan's Bankers Trust Company. Paul Warburg, really the head of it all, partner of Kuhn, Loeb & Company. He was tied directly into the Rothschilds. And together, those men represented, at the time, almost 25% of the entire world's wealth. Were in that room at that meeting.
That's so reminiscent of Hank Paulson calling all the bigwigs in from Goldman Sachs, his former coworkers, and deciding, hey, let's give almost a $1 trillion bailout here on bailout number one. It's just amazing how this is a club. It has nothing to do with being for the people. It's just an elitist club.
Correct. And after that meeting, they attempted to try to pass the legislation first through the Republican Party, and then they switched it to the Democratic Party, and they attacked the bill that they wrote, and it wound up passing on December 22nd, 1913. It was called the Glass-Owens Bill, also known as the Federal Reserve Act. And the Class A shareholders, talking about this club you mentioned, we're talking about the Rothschilds, Bank of England in Berlin, the Lazard Brothers Bank of Paris, the Israeli Moses Seif Banks of Italy, Kuhn Loeb Bank of New York, the Warburg family in Hamburg, Germany, and Amsterdam, the Lehman Brothers in New York, Goldman Sachs again, and then, of course, the Rockefeller Chase Manhattan Bank of New York. So you have these families, these banking cartels that created an illegal, unconstitutional, totally fraudulent, private Federal Reserve Bank that removed the powers given to Congress under Article 1, Section 8, where the government, Congress, has the power to regulate money and to coin regular money and to determine the value thereof, and started issuing, you know, fiat currency backed by nothing. And within 20 years, the United States was broke. We were bankrupt. We filed bankruptcy on June 5th, 1933. It was House Joint Resolution 192, and that was the big gold act. Remember where they made gold illegal? Well, that's called bankruptcy. In fact, even the Ohio congressman on the congressional house floor said, here stand we now in Chapter 11 bankruptcy. I mean, so this information is on congressional record. It's very much out in the open that the United States has effectively been operating in bankruptcy for over 70 years. So it's a private bank, the Federal Reserve is. It's not part of the United States government. They create money out of thin air. And I don't say that. I mean, this is in their own publications. You can even Google the modern money mechanics. The Federal Reserve comes out and says how they have the money expansion, fractional reserve banking. And so the U.S. dollar, or more accurately, Federal Reserve notes, prints money with the Rothschild emblem on it. It has the Egyptian pyramid, the Mason all-seeing eye, and inscribed says, "In God we trust." And without getting into the religious implications of this, you really have to ask, who is their God? With the type of activities that they're involved in, you know, what God are they referring to? And if you listen to this quote, this is the United Nations publication. This was over a decade ago. David Spangler, the United Nations director of the Planetary Initiative, who said, and I quote, "No one will enter the new world order unless he or she will make a pledge to worship Lucifer. No one will enter the new age unless he will take a Luciferian initiation."
So they're Satanist? I mean, these are satanic symbols and groups?
This is according to their own words and their own writing. They are into some pretty demonic stuff. Yes.
Wow. It's amazing. Because, you know, what I was going to ask you, Jay, is, okay, so let's just, I want to sort of approach this from another angle, if you will. Let's just assume everything you're saying is 100% completely accurate. And obviously there's a lot of people talking about this nowadays. There's a lot of documentation, and people mm-hmm. shouldn't be document deniers, as you say. So let's just say everything is completely true that you've told us today and that other people are talking about this stuff. Question next, so what? what does it mean to me? What are they doing to us? I mean, certainly they're devaluing our money, our, I should say, currency, not to be confused with money. Those are different things. Money being something real that you can actually use, currency being a symbol of money, okay? So the dollar is just a symbol of real money. It's currency. What are they doing to us? What do we need to be worried about?
Yeah. Oh, your life, for one. Let's run through briefly a list of the organizations that the New World Order on record has created, and then either jointly or separately, what those organizations as part of the New World Order have done. Okay. They created the World Bank, the Federal Reserve Bank, the Bank of England, the United Nations, the International Monetary Fund, the World Health Organization, and the World Trade Organization. So they financed both sides of two world wars. They orchestrated the crashes of 1921 and 1929. They created the Great Depression. They manufactured financial bubbles and the subsequent crises that ensued thereafter. They oversaw recessions in 1953, 57, 59, 75, and 81. They planned the stock market black money in 87 and 2008. They have systematically devalued the nation's currency by a little over 97%, on average about 1% per year. And that's called inflation, right? It's a hidden tax, the devaluation of purchasing power. And they finance and believe strongly in eugenics, which is population control and reduction programs, population reduction programs. They support communism, fascism, totalitarianism, pretty much every other ism out there. They're just umbrellas of the same term. They invented the man-made idea of global warming, to which they want us to pay a carbon tax, right, for basically the right to breathe. And they fabricated the war on drugs. They're responsible in large part for the attacks of 9/11, if not wholly. They incited the war on terror, right? They bury nations in mountains of debt that they know that can never be repaid. They use fractional
great movie about that, by the way. See a movie called, a documentary called Life and Debt about Jamaica and how the IMF and the WTO went in and just destroyed that country. I mean, Life and Debt, it's about Jamaica. Very interesting.
Correct. And there's another one that you might want to pick up and read, or I believe it's also in the Zeitgeist film, but there's also the book by John D. Perkins, The Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
I had him on the show. Yeah, John Perkins was very interesting. Yeah.
We've done it systematically to a series of nations, right? Or I should say the New World Order has. And so then these commercial banks take huge risks against your money at ratios of 40 to 1 or more. And if they lose, they, you know, the taxpayer has to bail them out. And you've got the United States, which has been left with approximately $1,500 trillion in derivatives debt.
So first of all, let's just talk about the economics for a moment. The engineering of bubbles and crises, the Depression, Black Monday, et cetera. One of the things that the Federal Reserve promised back in the 1910 to 1913 era is that they said, if we had a good central bank like the Federal Reserve, we will end this up and down cycle, these radical swings in the economy. Of course, they didn't. It got worse. But that was their promise. So I just have to ask you this. Take their side of it for a moment. Would all these things have happened anyway? Would they have been much worse than they were? And what do they hope to gain by engineering these big swings in the economy?
Well, that was never the intention of the Federal Reserve to try to eradicate the swings in the financial markets. That was their pitch, again, because they incited the banking scare of 1907. Their desire was to fuse the relationship between the private banking cartel and the government, because that fusion of power is what allows them to loan the government money created out of thin air and charge them interest on nothing without any oversight, any accountability, or any intervention, without any type of investigation or audit. You had a lot of things in there. I'm trying to help exactly remember. What was your question? I apologize.
It was a big compound question. I'm sorry. What are they gaining from the bubbles? I mean, I would certainly see one thing. It's the concept of the false flag. So they engineer a crisis so they can come in and do something. And I think really Americans have to watch out, because the next crisis that I think they're going to engineer is they're going to engineer a crisis in order to nationalize retirement plans. I really really think that's the next big, big thing coming. Well, there's another big, big thing coming, and that is also, and these are just my predictions or fears, and that is that the COMEX is a Ponzi scheme. There's not really gold to back up or silver to back up all of this trading that's going on. So those two things, I think, are coming, and I don't know, maybe they interrelate. Maybe this is why they'll have to nationalize the retirement plan so the government can gain more control and more money.
Let me take a brief pause. We'll be back in just a minute.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn about investing in and managing income properties for college students, there's a show for that. If you want to learn how to get noticed online and in social media, there's a show for that. If you want to know how to save on life's largest expense, there's a show for that. And if you'd like to know about America's crime of the century, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
The false flag aspect I certainly see as being a very valuable thing to the New World Order.
Correct. It's problem, reaction, solution. You incite a problem to get a reaction so that you can bring the solution that you wanted to have put into place anyway, but without having that problem and reaction scenario, it would have never passed. It wouldn't have flown. And that can be seen looking at just the Vietnam War, the Gulf of Tonkin, an event which never took place. You look at the Oklahoma City bombing. There's a great new film out called A Noble Lie. I recommend your viewers, you know, watch that. That was an absolute inside job. And more evidence is coming out to suggest the same thing is true of 9/11. And it's so obvious, it's so apparent how almost 500,000 pieces of steel were quickly removed after the incident, shipped to China, melted down, and put into cars so that they could never be investigated. And that's just one little...
Kind of like Osama bin Laden's body.
Well, I mean, Osama bin Laden, come on, he was a CIA asset. He was deeply involved with the Bushes. In fact, they were part of the Saudi bin Laden group. You know, the bombings of our embassies overseas, the bases, it is very much an elitist club where they're all in bed on this together. And I'm also concerned that a false flag could transpire very quickly to incite, for all intents and purposes, potentially a third world war involving a conflict with Iran. Really, there are only a few countries that sit outside of this new world order corporatocracy, if you will, and that's Iran, Venezuela, Russia, and China. And so the United States and the New World Order, England, Vatican, the inner city of London, this group, this organization very much wants to be able to take control of that region. And they could easily incite a false flag to initiate a conflict there and then divert the attention from the just total financial collapse of the United States, ensure that the only hope America has right now, which is in Ron Paul, does not get elected as the candidate for the 2012 presidential election.
You know, it's unbelievable how the corporate media just does such a good job of marginalizing everybody who talks about this stuff. Oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. Like, that's some wacko thing. I mean, what exactly is so crazy about being a conspiracy theorist? Conspiracies exist. I mean, any rational person would agree. A conspiracy is nothing more than two or more people getting together and planning something. The founding of America was a conspiracy against the British. Come on. What is so crazy and nutty about conspiracies? They happen. They exist. People conspire with their friends in social circles. I mean, just watch any movie, mainstream pop culture movie about teenagers. You know, I mean,
sure.
It's conspiracies happen all the time. They're all around us. So, but they just marginalize everybody who wants to talk about any of this stuff, whether it be Ron Paul or anybody, you know, Alex Jones, anybody talking about this kind of stuff.
Correct. And, you know, kudos to Alex Jones, man. What a great heart, tremendous courage, and a fortitude to have continued on the airs for, you know, over 15 years and just speaking so boldly and documenting his arguments. Kudos to Alex. There's a deliberate dumbing down of America. In fact, I apologize, I'm forgetting her name. She was the number two woman in the Department of Education under Ronald Reagan, and she wrote a book on it called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. It was 700 and some odd pages in its original format. And that's a great point. Why is it that these so-called labeled conspiracy theories are so freakish or, you know, not cool or you're not in or okay with it? But if you know the latest statistics about, I don't even know who's coming up in the latest Super Bowl. I mean, seriously, I could really care less. It's so irrelevant at this point. You know, we're so late in the game. It's like going to the Colosseum when Rome is burning and the troops are about to come in, you know.
It's bread and circuses. These are all just huge distractions.
Total distraction.
Yeah. Total
and they're
distractions.
Doing a damn good job of it.
And by the way, I looked up that book as you were talking. It's Charlotte Thompson.
Correct. Thank you. So the United States as a country has really posed the single greatest threat to the New World Order, because at least at one point in time, we had a strong belief in personal liberties, and we stood for individual property rights, freedom, and self-determination. And that's like,
garlic to a vampire, yeah.
To a vampire, correct, right? And this doctrine and this experiment in the right to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness has really become a beacon of hope and inspiration for the world. And so this New World Order triangular city-state empire, this private empire hidden in plain view, has aggressively been trying to destroy the remaining remnants of sovereignty the United States has had in much the same fashion it's done with dozens and dozens of other nations throughout the world, of which you mentioned one being Jamaica. So through the collapse of the American dollar, civil unrest that would ensue shortly thereafter, the New World Order is looking to install a centrally dominated dictatorial government. And in the case of the United States, where the Constitution and the Bill of Rights just don't even exist anymore, let alone you wouldn't have Second Amendment, you wouldn't have Fourth Amendment rights, the privacy of searching, the seizure of your possessions. And you can see these stated goals taking shape in the consolidation of federal powers, some of which we mentioned during our last show together. It's just a total power grab, you know, by the executive branch of government to utterly deny the American people a dissenting voice, which is almost the essence of a free society, and to allow the common individual the opportunity to approach their government for the redress of grievances.
Well, it's amazing that they ever let America get this far. I mean, what an infringement on their plans this is, this great experiment called America.
You know, let's talk about this, because this is, you know, history repeats itself, and if you don't learn from history, you're going to definitely repeat it, right? I mean, if you go back into the days of Andrew Jackson, who's one of my heroes in American history, in the book The Age of Jackson, he was speaking of Nicholas Biddle, who at the time was the president of the Second Bank of the United States. And Biddle not only suppressed internal dissent, but insisted flatly that the bank was not accountable to the government or the people. And listen to this. Out of the beginnings of the banking war, Biddle writes, "No officer of the government, from the president downwards, has the least right, the least authority, the least pretense for interference in the concerns of the bank. The government, being the executive branch, should regard only the rights of the bank and the instructions of those who govern it, and who should be at all times prepared to execute the orders of the board," meaning the bank, "in direct opposition, if need be, to the personal interests and wishes of the president and every officer of the government," which includes us, right? And that was Andrew Jackson's campaign to rout out the bankers. I even believe on his deathbed, he said, what are you most proud of in your life? And he said, you know, that I routed out the bankers. If you look at Woodrow Wilson, who was just used as a pawn brought into the President of the United States specifically for the passage of the Federal Reserve Act, in his farewell address speech, he said, "Since I entered politics, I have chiefly had men's views confided to me privately. Some of the biggest men in the United States in the field of commerce and manufacture are afraid of something. They know that there is a power somewhere so organized, so subtle, so watchful, so interlocked, so complete, so pervasive, that they better not speak above their breath when they speak in condemnation of it." And you know, you continue to move forward in American history. Probably one of the most revealing speeches I think ever given by President John F. Kennedy. This was at the address at the American Newspaper Publishers Association at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York in 1961. And if you can indulge me for a minute, some of you may have heard this, but it, you know, words of John F. Kennedy are, you know, pretty immortal, if you will. So bear with me for a second. Let me read this very brief passage from this speech to the American Newspapers Publishers Association. John F. Kennedy said, "The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, and we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources in the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, and no secret is revealed. I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people, for I have complete confidence in the response and dedication of our citizens when they are fully informed. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solomon decried it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. I am confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent."
And does a guy like that get to keep on living, or is he too dangerous to the New World Order?
Yeah, there was a video put out on YouTube of Jacqueline Onassis where she said, and it was quickly pulled, she said, "The reason that my husband was murdered was because he passed Executive Order 11110, and that executive order didn't abolish the Federal Reserve, but it permitted for competition. It allowed for other forms of currency to come into place. And that executive order, in conjunction with stopping the military-industrial complex, that portion of the triangle of this New World Order city-state, you know, triangulate, stopping the military-industrial complex from wanting to go into Vietnam, and then legalizing competition, right, which the New World Order said competition is a sin, they made sure that he was assassinated within 6 months. And it's really time for Americans to grow up, to grow a backbone, to wake up and to stand up, and to do what you can with what you have wherever you are to help other people to become informed, to take action, to head this off. Because if you're afraid, if you cower, if you bow, if you think, "Well, I'll just wait until this passes," guys, it's going to get a lot worse. One of the primary reasons I believe, and many others do, that the United States is still hanging in there, if you will, financially, is just because we have the ability to print the world's reserve currency and print our way out of debt. In fact, it wasn't too long ago on the news that Greenspan actually said, you know, the reason that America will never default on its debt is because they have the ability to print it to pay for it. And he was also, I think it was 60 Minutes, but he was on the news years ago, and he said that the Federal Reserve answers to no one, including Congress and the President, and that they're above the law. And until, you know, the average American really takes ownership of their heritage and what our men and women in uniform have fought and died and bled for and come home wounded for, is for the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, an unalienable rights that are not granted to us by a government, but by a creator. And the time is here, the hour upon us, the night is nigh, that we start doing something about it.
It just begs the question. I'm no fan of Barack Obama, but I just got to think that all those promises that candidate Obama made when he was running for the office, why wouldn't he want to keep them? Why would he want to have egg on his face and give his detractors any ammunition to use against him later? Why wouldn't he want to keep the promise of closing Gitmo, of ending wars, of all of the things that he said as a candidate, which sounded so good? It almost seems, Jay, like you become president and you are probably elected in a reasonably legitimate way. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's perfect by any means, you know, vote early and vote often, whatever the scam may be there, but the election's probably pretty legitimate. But what do? Do they take you into a room, the New World Order people, and say, "Look, you know what happened to John F. Kennedy? if you want to survive, if you want a chance at a second term, maybe it's not physical survival only, but there are all sorts of roadblocks they can put up that don't mean assassination. Do they just say, you're going to play by our rules and you'll have some latitude, but by and large, these are the things we care about and these are the things we need to see happen? How conspiratorial is it?
Well, there's an old expression, when do you stop a lie? When it's a little lie, or when it's a big lie. And it's much akin to rolling a snowball down the side of a mountain or boiling a frog. I mean, there's a lot of different analogies that you can use. But when you know, as Yoda used to say, you know, don't go down the path of the dark side, right? When you start to walk down that road, it's incrementalism. You'll reach a point where, kind of like on this pyramidal stair step, you'll go up a couple steps, and then if you start to gain a conscience or are reminded of the conscience you may still have at that point, the people who are higher up in, I don't know if sin is the right word, but in the deception of the lies or sold into this, you know, program of just really evil, they'll say, hey, if you don't keep walking up the ladder, look at what's behind you. We'll take these underpinnings out from underneath you. And they leverage you. And that's what happens, unfortunately, to a lot of congressmen and congresswomen and senators, is that maybe there's a sex scandal the background, or failure to file on a tax return, or they compromised on a deal in the past, and then it's just this slowly churning mechanism. They're very patient, they're very methodic, they're very systematic, and they will just box you in and continue to narrow your ability to escape or move outwards or fight back.
And they'll marginalize you. You know, absolutely. I remember watching a documentary about Ralph Nader and how he was attacking the auto industry. Well, they said attacking. He just wanted better car safety for people. And, you know, I thought Ralph Nader did some good things, and how he couldn't participate in the debates, and how they tried to have women throw themselves at him. They would hire these women to try and get him to have an affair or have some sort of sexual impropriety. And these forces are so powerful.
They are, but they're a small minority of people. Now, they happen to wield a very big bat, no doubt about it. But that's why I read that quote from John F. Kennedy, because he was actually speaking to the National Publishers Association. He was speaking to the media that says, don't bow down, don't cower in, stand up, let the American people know, be strong, you know, give a voice to what's going on behind the scenes. Over 90% of the world's media is controlled by four corporations: Time Warner, Walt Disney, General Electric, and News Corp. And so you've just got this absolute filtration of news as it goes down. I mean, even when you reach the local level, it's just this talking point that are systemic. I mean, you could turn on a local TV show in Florida or Montana, and it's just the same garbage. That's why I call them prostitutes. You know, they've just sold themselves out to whatever they're really told to report on or not report on.
Well, the bubble-headed bleach blonde comes on at 5. She can tell you about the plane crash with a gleam in her eyes, right? Don Henley's song, yeah.
Yeah.
It's something. Well, what should people do? Are there any action steps here, or is it just spread the word, understand it? Anything people can do?
Sure. Well, this particular subject happens to just been a passion of mine for 10 or 15 years. I'm very thankful that you brought me onto your show to try to help provide shed some light on this for people. And there may be a lot of your listeners who know most of this information, but hopefully there were a couple pieces that they picked up that were new or helped put some of the pieces of the bigger puzzle. You know, they could see the picture a little bit better. We have a company called Asset Protection Services. Our website is assetprotectionservices.com. And we provide incorporation services to help people to protect their assets, their reserves, their businesses, their livelihood, their homes from just being run amok by this New World organization. So, you know, you do what you can with what you have where you are. And we're also looking into providing private chartered jet services for people who are just tired of having the trained sexual assaultants, aka the TSA, you know, groping up your wives and your daughters. And I mean, it's just off the charts, guys. You know, there's no reason for Americans to tolerate that. You know,
I'll tell you something. I was so assaulted by TSA about a month and a half, 2 months ago, that I told the guy, I said, this is like reminiscent of Nazi Germany, you know, the way you had to show your papers everywhere you go and be checked and searched. And he said, no, we would have just taken someone like you out in the back and shot you then. I mean, it's just unbelievable that he just said that to me. You know, I just can't believe it.
And, you know, for those people, because there's a lot of good people in law enforcement. There's a lot of good people.
Sure, there are.
You know, but they either don't know or they don't want to know because their livelihood and their monthly paycheck depends upon it, right? Just because chickens have a free open range yard doesn't mean if they're on a McDonald's ranch that they're not going to wind up in a Happy Meal. And you need to understand is that this little bit of authoritarian power that you're given over the general public because it gives you a rush of control and power and authority that you may not have in other parts of your life, that's going to come back on you because you know you're not part of these families, right? You're not in the Bilderberg Group. You're not in this New World Order triangular city-state organization. So y'all need to start thinking about what you're doing because you're still part of us. You're not with them.
Well, very good points. Where can people learn more about your company and your services?
Yeah, please take a look at our website again. Thank you. AssetProtectionServices.com. We provide incorporation services, LLCs, living trusts for estate planning, offshore incorporation if it is appropriate for you, also dual citizenship in other sovereign nations. And again, we're looking into charter jet services. So if there are any people who are interested in not having to fly commercial to have to go through that type of humiliation and embarrassment and violation of your rights, you know, let us know.
Thanks so much, Jay Butler. Appreciate you joining us today and talking to us about the Illuminati and the New World Order. Thanks.
Jason, thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed.